This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, December 1st, 2011. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, Occupy Adrian Rich. It's rare to have poets take a public role in American life. Usually they make it into the national spotlight only when they're trotted out at a presidential inauguration. And then back to the academy. There are a couple of exceptions. Robert Bly escaped from the poetry ghetto when he championed the men's movement in the early 1990s. And then there's Adrian Rich, whose poetry and essays on feminism and politics have been hugely influential for decades. Adrian Rich is now in her 80s, and her output of poetry and prose has been vast. But we're going to listen to two short poems that should give a glimmer of her moral stature for so many people. I'm joined by Amy King, a poet and teacher at SUNY Nassau. Amy, last night I was riding my bike around Lower Manhattan just to see what was going on with the Occupy Wall Street protests. And it occurred to me that Adrian Rich should be poet in residence of Zuccotti Park or any place that protesters are occupying around the country right now. But then I thought, she's probably too radical for this, for that crowd down there. What do you think of her as the presiding spirit, or potentially a presiding spirit over these protests?
It's interesting that you actually mentioned this, because some of the poets who have been occupying Zuccotti Park have declared some spiritual ancestors in residence, I guess you could call it. I can't remember their exact wording. And they did not mention Rich, really? Ironically. But Rich, I think, would be a good person on that list. One of the things Rich has talked about in the past is there is no single issue campaign or movement. So this actually does sort of speak to what's going on in Occupy Wall Street and the other Occupy movements right now, because one of the ways the mainstream media is trying to sort of deflate or dissuade people from sympathizing with these occupiers, these protesters, is to say, one of the primary ways is to say they don't know what they're really out there for. Everybody has a bunch of different issues.
Yeah, they don't have a program.
Exactly. And Rich, I think, would appreciate that. And I think her poetics reflects that. She has been sort of compartmentalized in ways that I think is misleading of her poetries. She certainly tries to cast a wide net and make connections. She talks about how she doesn't say she wants the world to be the world. She wants the world to be a history so that we can recognize these connections and not be compartmentalized. So I think that with the Zuccotti Park situation, she would fit in well.
Mm-hmm. Let's listen to two poems by Adrian Rich. And the first one I want to play for you is a very short lyric from fairly late in her career. I think it was from early part of the first decade of this century. And it's called Wait. What do we need to know about this poem before we hear it?
I believe it was written on the cusp of the Iraq, the imperialist attack on Iraq.
Yes.
But we could call that the invasion.
The invasion of Iraq in 2003. Yeah, I thought it might be a little bit confusing for listeners, because there's a sentence in italics at the beginning of the poem that is broken up by other lines. And just so it doesn't seem so tangled for people, that sentence is, "In paradise, every third thought is of earth." Here's Adrian Rich reading Wait.
In paradise, every, the desert wind is rising, third thought, in hell there are no thoughts, is of earth. Sand screams against your government-issued tent, hell's noise in your nostrils, crawl into your ear shell, wrap yourself in no thought, wait, no place for the little lyric wedding ring glint, the reason why on earth they never told you.
That poem was recorded at the University of Pennsylvania in 2005 and comes to us courtesy of Penn Sound. So let's entangle the first part of that poem, which is what you would do if you were reading it on the page. There's, in paradise, every third thought is of earth. And then there's, the desert wind is rising. In hell, there are no thoughts. And so on till the end of the poem.
My approach to the poem is to first sort of, I mean, I think this is a common approach, is to try to sort of see what the literal situation is. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, knowing that this is before the Iraq invasion, I think of a soldier waiting for the attack, waiting to go in.
Yeah, and we have the desert wind is rising, which suggests the battle that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Sand screams against your government-issued tent. Hell's noise in your nostrils. Crawl into your earshell. Wrap yourself in no thought. Wait.
And then she says something very peculiar.
No place for the little lyric.
Why does she say that? If she is, in fact, addressing a soldier, why would she say no place for the little lyric?
I think that this line has a lot to do with poetry's place in the world for Rich. Poetry for Rich, I don't think, is a revolution. It's a tool that helps us to see what we need to do or what we need to see to be inspired towards revolution.
And there's no place for that tool for in the tent of this soldier or the soldiers that she's addressing.
There's no place for that tool or that use when your government has put you in a place that you can't use it or that you can't. But you can, actually, I think.
Mm.
It's about vision. It's about making connections. You know, like the fact that it runs into no place for the little lyric.
The little lyric, wedding ring glint, the reason why.
What am I supposed to see here? Why am I here? Of course, you're in the middle of, about to be in the middle of a war or an attack. And I think that a common response is probably, is this worth it? Is this meaningful? Why am I doing this?
Wait. No place for the little lyric, wedding ring glint, the reason why on earth they never told you.
Yeah, and the wedding ring, there's a suggestion of conventionality, of conventional thinking symbolized by the wedding ring itself. You've kind of gone along, you've gotten married, there you are in Iraq. You're not thinking.
Which is an institution she left and never went back to.
Yeah, and that has a lot to do with her own history, exactly.
Yeah.
And longtime readers of Audrey and Rich will pick up on that, I think, pretty quickly. So let's listen to another poem that is also a direct moral challenge. This one is called What Kind of Times Are These? And this poem at least was published in the early 1990s, and it suggests that it was in response or around the time of the first Gulf War. Anything else that we should sort of know about this poem as before we hear it?
I know that she draws the title from a Bertolt Brecht poem that he wrote right before World War II.
So it is indirectly referring to war in the title itself.
Yes.
And Brecht, of course, the playwright and lyric poet and left-wing diehard communist from the 30s and 40s and 50s. Here's Audrey and Rich reading What Kind of Times Are These?
There's a place between two stands of trees where the grass grows uphill and the old revolutionary road breaks off into shadows near a meeting house abandoned by the persecuted who disappeared into those shadows. I've walked there picking mushrooms at the edge of dread. But don't be fooled. This isn't a Russian poem. This is not somewhere else but here. Our country moving closer to its own truth and dread, its own ways of making people disappear. I won't tell you where the place is, the dark mesh of the woods meeting the unmarked strip of light, ghost-ridden crossroads, leaf-mold paradise. I know already who wants to buy it, sell it, make it disappear. And I won't tell you where it is, so why do I tell you anything? Because you still listen. Because in times like these, to have you listen at all, it's necessary to talk about trees.
The audio for that poem comes courtesy of the Poetry Archive in the UK. Both poems are used by permission of Audrey and Rich and the Francis Golden Literary Agency. Amy, I want to play that last stanza again because it's so unusual to be spoken to like this in a poem.
And I won't tell you where it is, so why do I tell you anything? Because you still listen. Because in times like these, to have you listen at all, it's necessary to talk about trees.
I find those lines moving and insulting at the same time because I thought, oh, she has to talk about something pretty and pleasant in her poems for me to want to engage the poem. I feel accused.
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
I didn't feel implicated in it. She doesn't like the term political poetry. She likes poetry of witness. Mm. And the reason she likes that kind of poetry, poetry of witness, is because she is very much interested in developing and inspiring empathy in people. And the only way you can really charge people's sense of empathy is to tell them about other people they don't know. One of the ways I approach this poem is to ask, who is this you? Because you still listen.
I won't tell you where the place is.
I read that as someone who is on the fence, who still has a sense of empathy. I think of like the police who are doing the bidding of the government, which is ultimately doing the bidding of corporations right now.
I know already who wants to buy it, sell it, make it disappear.
People who are a paycheck away from being the 99%, but they potentially will still listen and empathize, even though they are still in positions of power. But she's not going to tell them where the meeting place is.
Yeah, that's curious. And also the meeting place is, curiously enough, going back, I'm guessing, to the American Revolution against Great Britain.
There's a place between two stands of trees where the grass grows uphill and the old revolutionary road breaks off into shadows, near a meeting house abandoned by the persecuted who disappeared into those shadows.
I thought it found an unusual place to begin that poem. Why do you suppose she's bringing it all the way back there?
This speaks to Rich's desire to see the world as a history, because history can teach us things that we continuously forget. Mm. And the meeting house itself conjures the idea of like a Quaker house meeting in secret. But even more significant is the fact that she wants to talk about trees. Because if she talks about the meeting house, then she has to talk about the revolutionaries. And this speaks to our disconnect, our lack of memory. So when we talk about the abstractions, when we talk about the ideological issues, we can zone out. We don't have to empathize with those revolutionaries. But if you talk about the trees, you have to either acknowledge a tree because it's concrete, it's a detail. Trees are symbolic. They signify location. They signify place. And even more importantly, they signify community. Because trees don't exist usually on their own in single places. Mm-hmm. If you think about the history of trees, and this kind of resonates with Zuccotti Park, the fact that everyone's meeting in the park. They're not meeting in, you know, a plaza. They're not meeting in on corners. They're meeting in a park, which is where trees are. Mm. Trees have been places of refuge. Think about the Druids. They went to have spiritual meetings in the trees. African-American slaves went to groves of trees at night to sing spirituals, to revitalize themselves. Trees are not just the spiritual, but they're also a place of communication. If you think about the Greeks met in groves of trees. Mm. The academy, the ancient meaning of academy, is grove of trees.
Hmm. And I won't tell you where it is, so why do I tell you anything?
She's not going to tell that person where that house is, because capitalism is the economy of the day, and we are all consumers.
I know already who wants to buy it, sell it, make it disappear.
That same person who might have that empathy and empathize will instead hear where that house is, and it's for sale cheap, and I'm going to make some money on it.
Again, there's a certain mistrust, and ironic mistrust of us.
Well, of the conditioning we've been brought to. Mm-hmm. The actual trust is that she believes we can get away from that conditioning. But she does not, I don't think that she doesn't want you to find that place. I think she does want you to find that place eventually.
But she's suggesting it's not necessarily easily bought and sold. You have to work for it.
You have to find that place. Mm-hmm. It's sacred. It's spiritual. You can't commodify it. Mm-hmm. And when you find that place, it's because you have understood the conditions that brought the persecuted to meet in secret and react in multiple ways.
God, why isn't she the patron saint of Zuccotti Park? And they, you know, her way of thinking is radically in line with them, even though she takes it much, much further. It's much more sophisticated than most of the young people who are in the park are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amy King, thanks so much.
Thank you, Curtis.
Amy King's most recent book is I Want to Make You Safe, a title that somehow does not make me feel safe. You can read more poems by Audrey and Rich on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Let us know what you think of this program, where our motto is...
Wait.
Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.